And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
And I think we see Willis coming out.
Here he comes right now. 6 feet ten from Grambling. The captain of the Knicks, the most valuable player of the NBA. Frazier then slows it down. Is picked up by Jerry West at the top of the post. Reed. Good. Willis Reed scores the first bucket here tonight. And Reed now is outside. There's his second shot. He is 2 for 2. Willis Reed.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today is Tuesday, June 2nd. This is episode 235. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave us some questions, comments. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. Obviously, we're going to get it started with the Knicks. NBA Finals get started tomorrow. We now know the opponent. It is the San Antonio Spurs. Guys, let's wrap that up before we get into the Knicks-Spurs little mini preview we're going to do. Any thoughts on Spurs taking out OKC in seven?
Gee, why don't you lead us off? Because you had a comment you wanted to make, and then Kevin and I'll jump in.
So, game seven, final score 111-103. You know, Oklahoma, it's a pretty decent game for the most part. OKC's down six. It's 109-103. There's 41 and a half seconds left, and just another reason why we can't stand the way the NBA is. OKC gets a steal on a San Antonio inbound. There's two passes. SGA gets a chance at a drive to the basket from inside the three-point line with 37 seconds left on the clock. And he elects to just dish it back out to basically nobody that's open for a three-pointer that misses. And now more time comes off the clock. Instead of driving to the basket with probably 38, 39 seconds and getting two and maybe a foul and maybe getting a steal on the inbound and knocking the lead down from six to four to maybe three. And all of a sudden there's no hope. And the lead never dissipates from six. The play is over. OKC doesn't get any kind of basket. San Antonio gets the ball back. They come down. It's another two-pointer. Game's over. And there's another reason why we hate the NBA. Why couldn't you have just taken the two?
Well, the thing about it is, and you're right, because the game virtually ended. If the three is part of your offense there, absolutely you take it. If you're driving and there's an open guy in the wing, Kev, right, you're going to dish it to him and let him take that shot.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you take the quick points. Quick points mean something.
37 seconds.
Plenty of time. Roughly.
If you cut it to four, like you said, Gino, maybe even throw the foul, maybe it's three. But at worst, you're talking four with 37 seconds left. That's still plenty of time to play defense.
You don't even
have the foul yet.
Yep.
It's, you know, but you know, everybody has to shoot threes.
And threes that were not wide open, threes that were
no, you know,
they were contested. Yeah. They were contested threes, which is not a good three ever.
Yep.
Unless you're, you know, Steph Curry, you don't take the contested three. Larry Bird, you know, there's certain guys, Reggie Miller over the course of time. Jordan, just because he's Jordan. You know, that's it.
Bird will actually tell you where. Bird's got to tell you where he's shooting the three-pointer from.
I'm going to bank it after I take two steps in. I'm going to shoot it off, and then I'm going to slap it on top of the head, and you're going to cry a little bit.
And it annoyed me so much when it happened that when the game was over, I actually rewound on DVR and wrote the play down as it was happening because I had to bring it up because it just aggravated the hell out of me.
Yep.
Okay? The only point I'll make on that game,
the Spurs are a year ahead of schedule in my book. I didn't think that they would win a road game at OKC in game seven. got to give a lot of props to Castle and Harper, because not that SGA didn't score in the series, but they kind of held him in check. As much as you're going to hold a guy like that in check. What's his name? Was invisible, the big kid. Why am I blanking on his name? The 7 footer.
The other one.
Yeah, the 7 foot kid. Holmgren. He was off.
Holmgren
was taken out of the game so easily, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, Spurs, you know, they're a unique team to play against, Kev. No?
Oh, they certainly are. You know, you don't see too many 7 foot five, give or take an inch here or there, guys who can step outside and bury it from 28 feet with no problem. I mean, he's got handles and shooting range like a guy a foot and a half smaller than him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, he can swat. He's such a difference maker on the defensive side too, where, you know, just the intimidation factor of seven and a half feet just makes it tough to play against.
No, you're right. Well, Kev, while you're talking, why don't you tell us about what you're thinking about here in this final?
Well, you know, let's start with the big guy, Wembanyama.
Okay.
You know, how are the Knicks going to guard him? And the best thing they got to have to do is throw bodies at him. I think you got to have to start with Cat on him. Just match up height for height at the start. But
you got to love it when height for height has you 7 inches shorter. But I'm just saying, but that is the height for height. You're 100% right.
Yeah. And then you have to play Robinson. I know he's got the broken pinky. He got the surgery. You know what? Suck it up. We need 10, 12 minutes from him a night.
It's a pinky. It's not a thumb. Let's play.
And let's face it. It's not going to affect his shooting. He can't shoot.
No. Was it going to make his foul shooting worse, G? I don't think so.
Is that really the best way to go, though?
Yeah. And then I think the bulk of it's going to be OG on him, because OG, even though he's giving up a foot, he's going to body him up and play physical. I think it's just multiple looks and multiple different ways of playing him. You run three guys at him. And you know what? If the big guys start getting a little foul trouble, you know, you've got another 7-footer and Haporti to put in there too for a couple of minutes a night. Wemby is a very unique talent, but he's razor thin. And I think you see it once in a while. If you really play physical with him by the fourth quarter, he has a tendency to wear down a little bit because he just doesn't have the stamina. And I think that's where the Knicks can play into it. They can keep running bodies on him.
I'd be more worried about Cat picking up fouls too early. That's my only problem with that. I agree with you for the most part on that. I just would be really worried about Cat picking up too many fouls too early.
I'd more tend to start Cat on him. If he picks up one early foul, you make the switch pretty quick.
It goes right to Champigny and that and Champagny, and that's it. You know, yep. You put him right out there, let him guard the 3-point shooter, force them to make him the offensive player that beat you.
Yep. Now, defensively, it's going to be interesting to see what Santino does and who they put Wemby on.
I think it's going to be hard, but I don't. that's what they've done.
Yeah, because they're going to let Hart take the open three.
Yep.
And if Hart has, you know, which one of the last series? Game two, was it?
Yeah, game two.
When he went where out. He scored 26 and was hot from three. You know, you can change San Antonio's strategy a little bit there. If they decide to switch it up and put Wembanyama on Cat, for example, well, you know what? Cat can pull him outside a little bit because Cat can go out and play the mid-range game as well. But no matter what they do, if it's Wemby and Hart and Wemby's playing that, you know, free safety thing, what the Knicks are going to have to do to beat Wemby is really what they've done for the last two rounds: push the ball, get up court, fast pace, don't let San Antonio set up in their half-court defense. And when they do have a little bit of a half-court game, they're going to have to do what they've been doing and pass the ball around. Cat's going to have another series where he averages 6 assists just to keep the ball moving. I think that's the way they have to attack the San Antonio defense.
I agree. I mean, here's the thing, right? This is going to be one of those series where the benches are going to have a big role. I mean, you can't expect Landry Shamet to shoot like he shot in the last series, but you still need him to be a major contributor. You expect Clarkson to get a few more minutes than he had. He actually played well against San Antonio this year. Alvarado is going to have to be a factor. McBride's going to have to be a factor, right? Mm-hmm. And for the Spurs on the other end, now, technically, Harper's a bench player, but he averages like 28 points a game. So 28 minutes a game, I should say. So he's more like a sixth starter. They have Keldon Johnson and Cornette as the other two major guys. The Knicks bench is going to have to outplay that Spur bench, right? I mean, Landry Shamet, it's either got to be Shamet or McBride or Clarkson. Those guys have to be hitting shots in order for this team to win. They're going to have to win it on that back end. The other side of this is OG, like you mentioned, on defense. The wingspan's still 7'1". He's 6'8", 240, so he probably outweighs Wemby.
He still weighs him,
he's physical, and he's got a longer wingspan than he gets credit for. And I know that's where Gino's leaning when he says he doesn't want Cat to get fouls. He'd rather see OG play a little smarter. I'm guessing. I'm speaking for you. I might not be the guy you're thinking of at all, but that's where I think that they might have to go for a big chunk of the game. Jake?
No, it is, and I agree with Kev. I'm worried, especially Cat early. I almost want to put OG on him early and then switch off to Cat. And let's make sure we get the first quarter of the game at a Cat with, you know, less than two fouls on him. Because if he gets two fouls early in that game, then Brown's going to put him on the bench. You're going to be without Cat. Robinson's going to come in. And then everybody at that position moves up a little bit. You're going to be shorthanded for a big man as we come into that, you know, second quarter. Then you're going to be short going into the third. That's my only problem. You know, once we knew that the Spurs were going to be the Knicks opponent, we have a text chain going. So here are all the comments and tips that were going on and thoughts. So Brunson is going to have to work harder to get shots off. The Spurs may wear them out defensively. Hart, OG, and Bridges need 50 to 60 points a game. The strategy may be to let Wemby score, but let nobody else hit an open three. The Spurs are very athletic, but the rest of the lineup is very small, so they tend to start. They don't rebound very well, and they don't have a lights out 3-point shooter. So, just a couple of things that were said on our chat about the tendencies and thoughts basically on the game. Listen, for me, here's my thing. And I think game one is huge. I don't think it's big. I think it's huge. I think Knicks need to keep the win streak alive. I think they need to prove that they can win versus Wemby in the playoffs. And three, they need to steal some of the mojo that the Spurs have coming off this OKC win in game seven. And I think if they get that, that will help them as we go into this series. And, you know, I think it's bigger than a regular game one win here. I think this is a really big one. Can they win if they don't, you know, get that game one? Yeah, they probably can. But I think this one is a little bit bigger than what we see. And my other thing is, who do you guys think is going to be guarding Brunson for the majority of this time?
Castle.
It's going to have to be Castle.
It's going to be Castle, okay. 99% of it. Actually, I think the interesting part of it's the other way, because the Knicks brought in guys like Ananobi and Bridges and Hart to guard like Tatum and Brown. Now you're going to see Ananobi on Wemby.
Yeah.
You're going to see Bridges on Fox or Hart on Fox, one or the other, and the other guy's going to be on Castle. So now all of a sudden it's not necessarily about wings so much as about guys that are like either centers or basically point guards is the way it switches, where they'll try to hide Brunson a little bit on Vassell. Not that Vassell can't score, but he's more of a three-point shooter. He can definitely hurt them on the offensive glass. That's kind of where I see the Knicks defensively having to be. And when Dylan Harper comes in, it becomes, you know, the same type of situation where those guys, along with McBride, who's a little bit of a better defender than Brunson, you know, kind of dig in on that. And the other way, I think that you'll see rotation like we talked about with Wemby. You're going to see Castle, but you're going to see Harper, and you're going to see Vassell. You're going to see Fox for a little bit. They're going to throw bodies at Brunson, yep, much like the Knicks are talking about throwing bodies at Wemby and hoping for the same wearing down type of thing in the fourth quarter, where Brunson has been so great as a Knick. And even when you go back to his college days, he was great in clutch situations, but they're going to throw everybody they can think of at him, Kev.
The Knicks are going to have to play well enough, and Brown's going to have to trust the bench, whether it's, you know, McBride or Alvarado or some of those guys, to give Brunson enough blows in the first three quarters so he is fresh for the last 10 minutes of the game. That's going to be their strategy, is using the bench. And thankfully, we have a coach that does use the bench.
No, absolutely. He doesn't seem to be afraid of it.
Yep.
All right. What do you, Darren, what do you see?
I'm taking the Knicks in seven.
All right. This would be a little different than 99. Let's take a look. The 99 finals, the average score over the series, Spurs 85, Knicks 80.
Oh, God.
We have the Jeff Van Gundy Knicks, ladies and gentlemen. The Jeff Van Gundy Knicks.
They may hit more threes than that, Kev.
The two teams combined to make 6.5 threes per game. Combined. It's a far different game 27 years later.
Wow.
Rick Brunson was on that team, believe it or not.
Wow. He played 1 minute, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did get into the series. I think the Knicks get one of those two first two at San Antonio, and they pulled this one out in the Garden in game six.
I'm going to say New York in six. I think game one is the big one. I think that's the one they need. I think Wemby, this is a tough one. You know, I'm going to say New York in six though.
I think the experience of the Knicks, a little bit of an older team, I think as the series goes on, that's what we're hoping.
Yep.
We're hoping that the Garden's a little bit intimidating. Spurs is such a young squad. They're going to be here forever. I mean, anybody in the West is sitting there saying, shit, I got to play the Spurs for the next how many years? Excuse my language. But, man, it's like, damn it, this kid's only going to get better. He's 7'6". What happens when he gains 20 pounds of muscle out of nowhere? I mean, that's what they're thinking right now. And
he's going to get better, and OKC's got 15 draft picks in the next 10 years.
Oh, they're going to be strong as
hell. It's going to be those two. So, you know, this is the Knicks' opportunity.
And Cooper Flagg's only going to get better. And, you know, I'm just saying, listen, if you would have told us before the playoffs started that a team in the East had a shot of winning against the West, we would have laughed. None of us thought. We all thought the Knicks would make it to the final and, you know, be a conscientious objector and hang out, maybe win one, take it to five. We all said they had to win that Eastern Conference final in order for us to consider it a successful season. And now we sit here and we give them a chance because of how impressive they've been. Yep. And because we haven't seen them in 9 days, it gets a little bit lost of how impressive they've been, because we've seen San Antonio more recently win a big home game in game six and win a big road game in game seven. And we see all the things that the Spurs bring, and they're really good. But I don't think they're better than the Knicks. I think that they're as good. I don't think that they're necessarily better. The Knicks have to be shooting like they did in the last series. The Knicks can't win it if they're not hitting threes and not hitting shots and not getting ball movement, like Kev said before. The Knicks can't win it if their bench doesn't provide the spark, like you guys were both saying a little earlier, and they certainly can't win it if Cat gets into foul trouble, like Gino's been pointing out.
Yep.
They need everything to go like it's gone in the last, I don't know, what did we say, 11 games. 11 games, that's what we need, last month. And if it does, I think that the Knicks will end up victorious. That's, we all do. We're all a little biased, but I think the Knicks find a way to squeak this one out, guys.
Yep.
All right, so Gino has some King's Ransom bets. I'm gonna do this a little differently. You guys are gonna like this. So I have $50 to spend, and I'm gonna make $5 $10 bets.
Okay.
And they all hinge on everything that we basically said. So
Gino, make it $500 and $100
bets. All right, you ready? $500 bets. Here we go. The first bet is game one money line. Knicks money line bet. It's $100. It's +164 on the money line. Game second bet, $100. It is Knicks money line and Brunson +25 or more points. It's +264.
Okay.
The third bet, Knicks to win the finals, +170. The fourth bet is the Knicks to win in six games. So it's -1.5 games differential, +270.
All right.
And the fifth bet is a six game stretch where you need to pick the winner in all six games that pays out +2200.
Okay.
And it
that sounds easy, Gino.
And it goes Knicks one, San Antonio game two, Knicks game three, Knicks game four, San Antonio game five, Knicks game six, 2200 to one. And those are the five King's Ransom bets. It's $100 a bet, $500 going out.
Let's see what happens, baby.
All right. We will head over to a little NHL. Carolina versus Vegas has already started tonight. Kev?
Well, before the series, before tonight, you know, I'm looking at this, and these are the notes before the game started. You know, Carolina with their 4-1 series win, they took care of games 4 and 5 pretty easily, 4-0 and 6-1. They really, really started to play much better as the series went on. After, you know, the little bit of the rust from game one in that series. Vegas, when we were on the podcast last week, they already swept Colorado 4-0. And that sets up a pretty good final here. Two teams that are playing really well. Carolina's 12-1. You know, Anderson coming in, he's been great. 1.41 goals against, .931 save percentage. But on the other side with Vegas, Carter Hart's been just as good. 12-4, .222 save percent, .222 goals against, .924 save percentage. So the percentages are right there with each other. You know, I really like Carolina in this series, but you know, there's something about Tortorella magic or something. I don't know. He's got this team playing so well, and this game was pretty tight.
Yep, 4-3 right now. Last I saw with Vegas up.
Yep. Odds makers had Carolina at -155 and Las Vegas at +130 to win the Stanley Cup.
Yep. I mean, here's the thing in this series, right? You look at the other things, and it's very hard to nitpick Carolina 12-1.
Yeah.
It hasn't been the front line. It hasn't been the top line. It hasn't been Aho and Jarvis, right? It's been Taylor Hall's been the best player with Stankoven, right? It's been the other line score. They need to get the power play going. Power play was number 7 during the regular season, has not really clicked in the playoffs. And the same side, when you go the other way, Vegas, this is going to be the first team that actually puts pressure on them, okay? I don't mean it like where you know, that other teams weren't playing hard. But, you know, Colorado's reaction was to get back, let a guy like Marner kind of create a little bit and try to be behind the puck. Carolina's going to be on you with forechecking constantly. Carolina is going to pressure you every time you touch the puck, whether they're shorthanded, whether they're even strength, it doesn't really matter. Carolina is going to do all those things. So Vegas is going to have to react to that. On the other side, Vegas, Stone going to that third line has created a third scoring line that we haven't seen from Vegas all year. Again, this is a team that had less wins than the Islanders and the Devils. If you want to just talk about the locals here, right? And, you know, the whole thing is, like you said, both goalies have been really, really good. I expected this to be a really tight-checking, hard-hitting, nasty series. It's going to get nastier as it goes.
Yeah.
I think Carolina is going to win this in 7, but I think it's going to be a really really tight series. And I think as we get into games 5, 6, and 7, it's going to be 2-1. It's going to be bad bounce goals. It's going to be deflections and redirects. I think that's how you're beating these goalies right now as they both get themselves settled in. G, any thoughts on this series?
Well, remember, both of these goalies have been so hot for the playoffs, but neither of these goalies accounted for either team half of the wins that they had in the regular season. Neither of these goalies had that.
Anderson was hurt, and Hart was coming off of, you know, the accusations. We'll leave it there.
I think at the end of the day, Anderson outplays Hart. I think that's the difference. At the end of the series, I'm going to take Carolina to win this. They win this in 6, despite what you're seeing right now. Right now, it's 4-3 with about 11 minutes left. I think Carolina winds up winning this. Kev?
You know, you look at Vegas, and, you know, the two guys leading the way goal-scoring-wise have been Dorofeev and Howden. 10 goals each. Howden got his 11th goal tonight to lead all players in the playoffs. Points-wise, you know, two guys that, you know, Eichel's been there for a few years now, but you think back, he was sort of run out of Buffalo in some ways. Mitch Marner was always a disappointment in Toronto because he would never show up in the playoffs. Well, this year he's showing up in the playoffs with 21 points in 16 games. But I think, you know, just like you guys, I like Carolina's depth. I like the way they play. They've been by far and away the best team in the playoffs so far. I had them winning in 5, even though I could see all 5 games be 1-goal games.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought Carolina was going to win, like I said, a tough 5-game series. Wouldn't be surprised, especially with the way things are going tonight, if it goes 6 or 7. But I still like Carolina.
Yeah, the one thing to remember in this series in particular is just Carolina has always found a way. They've been close. They've been real close. But this year, their road to the championship has not been what you would call difficult. They beat Ottawa. They beat Philly. You know, and then they got by Montreal. Not that Montreal's bad. Not that Philly's bad. Not that Ottawa's bad. But they didn't really play they didn't have to play Colorado. You know what I mean? Like Vegas did. So Vegas might be a little bit like game one, I thought was going to be an iffy game for Carolina simply because this is a rising of caliber opponent that they're going to be meeting. But I think once they figure it out, I think they'll find a way to squeak through. But it's going to be fun. It should be a really good series. Should be really hard hitting. Should start getting nasty, which is what hockey fans enjoy.
All right. Kev, you had another NHL point?
Well, you know, sad news last week was Claude Lemieux committing suicide is what it turned out to be. I think hanging himself was a police report. And just 3 days before that, he was in Montreal to start the game there in Montreal. You know, he's a guy that, in some ways, when you read the report, he was kind of upset that he never got the call for the Hall of Fame because his numbers were there. Maybe his reputation, in some ways, maybe held him back.
Yeah.
And with the type of player he was, his family has donated. They said they're going to donate his brain to do some of the CTE examinations and research and see if there's any effect from CTE from the cause him to commit suicide. Which is a sad story. We all remember Claude Lemieux. Yeah, he had some of the dirty hits. He was a pain in the ass. If he played against you, you hated him. But he's a guy that always, always stepped up in the playoffs.
When he was a Devil, you know, you kind of caught yourself liking what you saw. In the Colorado-Detroit series, what he did to Draper, the cheap shot on Chris Draper.
Oh, yeah.
Is one that none of us will ever forget.
Yep.
And, and Detroit retaliated, you know, were fighting him. And Lemieux always stood up to every challenge in the fights. He fought when he had to fight. He didn't always win. He wasn't a fighter by nature, but he was a tough guy. Yep. Could put the puck in the net, could play shorthanded, and could play on the power play. Could do a lot of different things for you. And he probably is a Hall of Famer. And unfortunately, you hate to see it end like that, Kev.
Yep.
All right. Let's head over to a little baseball. So, before today, Yankees at 36-23, one game behind Tampa. Mets at 26-34. They're 4-6 in their last 10. Kev, any comments on the Mets?
Yeah, just the up and down nature of this team. You know, last weekend they were swept by Miami down there, scoring 2 runs. This past week, and they come back home and score 25 and sweep the Marlins. So it's up and down with them. Then they go take their fourth trip out west and lose 3-2 to Seattle, playing their major league leading 12th extra inning game. Nobody else has played more than 9. I mean, that's just the way the Mets season is. The Dodgers have yet to play an extra inning game.
It's because they beat everybody.
The Mets have had 12 already. Soto's been on an absolute heater. You know, last 16 games, 9 home runs, 18 RBIs, just playing incredibly. The pitching has been spotty. You know, I don't understand the split personality with David Peterson. You know, you look at his starting numbers, 7.5 ERA, 331 batting average against. You put him in the bullpen, either as a traditional long man or as a bulk reliever, whatever you call it, his ERA is under 2. His batting average against is 221. Same pitcher. I don't know what gives. But, you know, I guess $300 million doesn't buy what you expect. You know, their rotation right now is 5-inning Freddie, McClain and Scott, who struggle to get you more than 5 right now lately. And then you've got the opener / Pinaya and the opener / Tong and Peterson in long relief. You know, very inconsistent with the pitching, the starters. The offense, we know, except for Soto right now, you know, bench has been pretty well since the tough start. Ewing's cooled off quite a bit. And the rest of the lineup is just, you know, we know it's been the same story all year. It's been so up and down.
Okay.
What about the New York Yankees?
Listen, it's funny with the Yankees. I mean, they're playing well. It's like the funny thing is they're a game behind Tampa Bay going into tonight, obviously. Their run differential was plus 98. Tampa Bay's was plus 18. You know, I'm going to say Yankees are putting runs in. They played a couple more games, but, again, it's an 80-run differential. Third best in baseball behind the Dodgers and the Braves, by the way. Again, the rotation's coming around. You're waiting for – you figure at the end of the day, Heel and Weathers are in the pen, and you know, and those aren't a bad 6 and 7, and you know, Cole and Schlittler and Rodon and Fried when he gets back, and you know, this is a starting rotation that's built to last. The bullpen, obviously, we've talked about it since day one. We'll worry about that at another point. Judge is in an absolute opposite of Soto right now. He's in a major.
Well, yes, now he. Now he's dealing with a bone bruise in his ribs that's leading to the shoulder discomfort.
And there we are. But Ben Rice has been carrying this team. I mean, it's very hard to argue what we've seen from Ben Rice. And, you know, nobody's playing amazing besides Rice, but they're solid enough. Chisholm has come around a little bit. Volpe's contributed in spots. Caballero's nice to get him back in there. McMahon's over 200. Woo! The catchers aren't, by the way. And your call last week of trying to come up with a third option behind the plate is something that they definitely have to look into. And there's not a lot to pick on this team outside of the bullpen on bullpen and catcher. And again, it's May baseball or June baseball now. So we're going to find out a lot more over the next 30 days of what the Yankees are going to be able to do.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
The interesting thing that they've done is one of the top prospects, Carlos LaGrange.
Yep.
They've decided to put him in the bullpen and down in AAA. I think that's a precursor to saying,
no doubt,
let's see how he can handle the bullpen. And if he can come up, you know, give him a month down there. And by July 4th, if he's looking like he can handle the bullpen role, I wouldn't be surprised to see him come up.
He's throwing 103.
He can give 100 miles an hour out of the bullpen.
When you have this much starting pitching up here right now, Kev.
He's not going to help you in the rotation this year.
And honestly,
Will Warren has actually earned the job for the fifth spot. It's really hard to take it away from
him. Yeah. Kev, it may not even be he's not going to help you this year. He may not help you next year either.
Yeah.
If all these guys are really healthy, to be honest. So yeah, no, I saw it. I was going to mention it. So yeah, I agree. I was looking at some of the stats. Would you guys ever have thought that these were some of the league leaders as of June 1st before today's game? So the league leader in wins is Aaron Ashby, who doesn't start.
Yep. Yep. Milwaukee's been – it's like, remember that year that who was it? Corey Lytle just kept winning for the Yankees out of the pen. They just kept – he just kept coming in, and he was like 10-0, something like that.
He's halfway to the record. Elroy Face, 18-1. back in the 1950s for the Pirates.
The league leader in hits with 78 and batting average is Otto Lopez.
Which is what we all predicted in the beginning of the year.
No doubt about it.
The league leader in slugging is Ben Rice at 658. The league leader in RBIs is Andy Páez at 50. The leader in runs scored is James Woods at 53. And the league leader in stolen bases is Nassim Nunez at 22 for the Washington Nationals. So,
yeah,
a couple of league leaders.
I haven't seen an Otto this good since Otto Velez. This is exciting to watch.
I know they were all on your scorecard in the preseason. So,
not one of these guys was even probably in my top five in any of these stats. And that's obviously none of them were really close.
You know, Ben Rice, Wood, and Páez may have been on your preseason fantasy standings, but the others weren't. So,
yeah, we're sitting there saying, "I hope the kid can play first base every day." It's new, you know. He's still learning it, and then you know, instead he's hitting the crap out of the ball.
Any other baseball points, guys?
I don't have anything else. I mean, you know, Seattle finally passing the A's, I thought was pretty interesting. They finally have done that. The entire NL Central continues to play great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that all turns out.
Kev, you got some hidden gems for us?
Yeah. The other night, the Chicago White Sox, they're on defense. Ground ball to first, throw to short for the fourth out of second. Throwback is wild. Runner safe at first. He decides to try to go for second. First baseman feels it. Throws to second. Shortstop gets it. Tags him. It goes down as two separate 3-6 putouts on the same play. First time it's happened. It has happened before. June 26, 1972. Bob Gibson was on the mound. Tim McCarver was at the plate and hit into the 3-6, 3-6. Two out, not double play.
See, Kevin gets upset when I don't mention Bob Gibson, Gino. So, therefore, he brings him in. Thank you.
You're welcome. Here's another one just for Darren.
Thank you.
Only two players entered June with 70 hits and single-digit Ks in the last 50 years. Luis Arias this year, 70 hits, 9 strikeouts. Tony Gwynn. Tony Gwynn, 91 and 97.
Yeah.
So I got you Gibson and Gwynn.
You brought them both in. You know why? Because Gino needs to hear about this stuff.
Yep. So far this year, there have been 20 pitchers with 28 appearances. That puts you on pace for 75 appearances for the season. Blue Jays have 5 of them. Fluharty, Fisher, Hoffman, Varland, and Rogers. If they keep this pace up, they will be the first team ever to have 5 pitchers with 75 appearances.
Wow.
Think this is a bullpen year. This is a bullpen year.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
And who had the better May? Jacob Mizrowski.
Jacob Mizrowski. I'm gonna go with Mizrowski.
Huh?
I said I'm going with Mizrowski no matter what.
Six starts, 5-0, 0.23 ERA, 109 batting average against, 0.52 WHIP. 38 innings, 14 hits, 1 run, 6 walks, 57 strikeouts, 241 fastballs above 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
That kid sucks.
Only 20 of them were put in play, 5 singles off those fastballs. But he may have been outdone by Christopher Sanchez. You mentioned him last week. He went the entire month of May without giving up an earned run or any runs, period. Five starts, 4-0, 0 ERA, 0.72 WHIP, 181 batting average against. He's up to 44 2/3 consecutive innings pitched. Who holds the record?
Oral.
Oral Hershiser. Last 59 innings in September of 88. His September, just to put things in perspective, 5 consecutive shutouts of 9 innings. And his last start of the year, he went 10 shutout innings, but does not get the complete game because the Padres beat the Dodgers 2-1 in 16 innings.
Yeah, Pods.
So he has five complete game shutouts. There have been 4 complete game shutouts in the entire major leagues in 2 months this year.
It's crazy.
What a difference. And
the
those
sport
are my
has changed.
Yes, and those were my hidden gems for the week.
All right. So Saturday, it is Belmont Day.
It is.
However, Belmont is at Saratoga for another year.
Last time, hopefully.
Last time it is at Saratoga. Darren?
They'll run the mile and a quarter again, so it won't be that test of the mile and a half that we used to. Listen, we got knocked down to a 9-horse field for this one, okay? There was rumor of 12. We end up at 9. The 1-horse Vitruvian Man. You got Fresu and O'Neill, 30-1. Last start out was that Santa Anita finished 3rd. He's a closer. Sire is Vino Rosso. The 2, Power Shift, okay? Luis Saez and Pletcher. Last start was a maiden special weight at Churchill on 5-2. Won that race. 3 lifetime races. One of them he lost to Emerging Market, who we'll talk about later. Might be the lone speed in this race, okay? Unless somebody decides to jump out on him. 3, Chief Wallaby, okay? Oh, and the Saez Constitution, sorry. Alvarado, Junior Alvarado and Billy Mott. 4th in the Derby. Also a Constitution horse. He's a mid-pack kind of horse. He should be stalking, should be around the pace, but not at the pace. 3-1 morning line. By the way, Power Shift 12-1. 4, Renegade, the favorite, okay? Irad Ortiz and Pletcher go on this one. Another dead closer, but a strong closer, 2-1. Finished 2nd in the Derby. Ran a good race, actually, from the 1 spot. Into Mischief would be the sire. The 5 is Otino. Dylan Davis gets the mount with Chad Brown, 20-1. 2nd in the Bluegrass last time out. Quality Road, the old man. 6th, Growth Equity. Manny Franco and Chad Brown again. Won the Peter Pan, which has not been something that doesn't translate well to the Belmont. It's happened twice in the last, I think, 6 years where the Peter Pan winner has won. So Nyquist, again, another good papa, and this is a 12-1 shot. The 7 is Commandment. You get Johnny V gets the mount now. Now we switch over for the 4th jockey in 6 races on Commandment, right? Because nobody wants to ride a horse that won 3 in a row, but this is the way it works. 7th in the Derby, 6-1 right now, Into Mischief again, just like Renegade. Chad Brown, the trainer on that one. Brad Cox, the trainer on that one. 8, Emerging Market. You get Flavian Pratt and Chad Brown. This horse was 10th in the Derby, but you know what happened, Gino? He lost a shoe. So we don't know how he was going to run in the Derby because he ran with 1 shoe or 3 shoes, whatever the hell it was. Candy Rides the Old Man. This horse is 6-1. And then we go to the last horse, the Derby winner, Golden Tempo. Jose Ortiz and Sherry DeVoe, again, won the Derby. 9-2 shot, 95 buyer in the Derby, 2nd lowest buyer number in the Derby in the last 20 years. Only Rich Strike, who was 80-1, if you remember, had a lower buyer. So this is a horse that there's some questions about. So when you go through it, Kevin and I, the first thing we look at, okay, who's the speed in this race? Well, there's only 1 real horse. We don't know if someone else is going to go out with him, but Power Shift might be the lone horse.
Yep.
Who's going to close? There's about 4 of them that want to close. Led by Golden Tempo, who won the Derby, and Renegade, who's the favorite in this race. You know, Vitruvian Man probably doesn't belong if you're going to pick 1 horse that shouldn't be in here at all. Otino can also, he'll be even throughout. Chief Wallaby is a horse to really kind of keep your eye on in this one. Commandment is beating Chief Wallaby. Emerging Market with all 4 shoes. Let's see what happens. There's a lot to go after in this race. The 1 problem with it altogether, guys, is that once again, there's no chance at a triple crown. And it's not because one horse beat the other. It's because neither horse ran three races. So therefore, like we talked about a couple of weeks back, we have to start looking at what we're going to do to kind of make it mandatory that if you run in this race, you should have to run in the others. Very easy for us to say, very hard to do when all the money in this sport right now belongs to, you know, putting horses out to stud and siring. So that's kind of where we are right now. Kev, who do you like here in the Belmont?
You know, like you said, you know, Mike Rapoli's horse, Power Shift, with Pletcher, Only Speed, sets it up for Mike Rapoli's horse, Renegade, to come along and close.
Pretty much.
That's what I'm hoping for, at least, you know. I mean, it's funny. You've got him twice. You've got Ched Brown with three different horses in there, too. Yep. And that's, but no, seriously, you know, we saw Renegade, I think, from the one hole, in a 20-horse field in the Derby. He took the lead, just didn't have enough. I think this one with only nine horses, he's at the four, I think, at the fourth gate, and yep, should be able to have the trip that he wants at this time and sets it up. I think Renegade, as a favorite, does take it. I like Commandment. You know, he had back-to-back wins in the Fountain of Youth and the Florida Derby. And again, I think a little bit of a trip caused him there. You pick up Johnny V on a horse, too. I mean, I'll take that for second.
Nothing against Luis Saez, but the Saez to Velasquez move, to me, is a major upgrade.
Yep. And then you got to throw Chief Wallaby and Golden Tempo in there for the triples and exotics. But my picks would be Renegade on top of Commandment.
G, what are you thinking about?
I'm taking the horse with all four shoes this time. I'm taking Emerging Market, and I'm taking Chief Wallaby. I'm taking the 8-3. I think I may throw Commandment in there on my triple.
Okay. I'm going to take Chief Wallaby. I think that, you know what?
You liked him in the Derby too, right?
I liked him in the Derby. I think that he'll be close enough to the pace where he'll be where the closers may not have enough. I honestly think if Power Shift's able to nurse the pace, and again, if it was a mile and a half, it's much harder. But at a mile and a quarter, I think it might happen. I'm gonna take Chief Wallaby just nosing out Renegade, and I'm gonna say that we get Otino closing for third. So those would be my three horses in this race. Listen, Gino, I like Emerging Market too. I'm all over the place on this race right now. It's I can see Golden Tempo closing and getting in the money as well, just because he is a dead closer, depending on how the pace goes. Once again, we just need to fix the sport a little bit and try to make sure that the people that are in charge of it know how important these three races are. The biggest days for horse racing, as Kevin will tell you, is the breeders. You know, you get the 2 days, you get all these huge races, the purses are humongous, a lot of amazing things. But yet the general public can give a shit about the breeders. The general public is watching these three races at 7 o'clock, which used to be at like 5:30, and now they're at 7 o'clock. So they can get that prime time schedule on it. And that's where it changes. And they have to make sure that even though all the money's in the breeders, they need the casual fan to enjoy it and have something to root for. And that's really what we need to have come out of it. I think we'll get a good race this week. I really do. And I'm looking forward to next year when the Belmont's back in Belmont.
Yep.
Any other points? I know we want to talk a little NFL, right, Kev?
Yeah, Gino. Let's trade, Gino, right?
Yeah, so June 1st, you're allowed to make the trades where this it doesn't go against there's a cap part of this, so... We had the Eagles finally trade A.J. Brown to the Patriots.
Worst kept secret.
We knew it was happening. We had to wait for June 1st for it to happen. They get a fifth-round pick in 2027 and a first-round pick in 2028. And what we didn't see coming was the big trade that happened. So the Cleveland Browns trade 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, Myles Garrett, to the Rams for Pro Bowl pass rusher Jared Verse, for a first round 2027, a second round 2028, and a third round 2029. So they get three picks and Verse for Myles Garrett. huge haul they get for Garrett. It's more of a win now kind of trade for them.
Well, your quarterback's 40.
Yeah. Oh no. That's listen. It's they're all know, if you're looking at it, it's 2 years basically. You know, it's 2 years now. Basically, you got to do this now. So this is the trade if you're making it. Any comments on the two trades, guys?
Well, the Brown trade we all knew was happening. So
yeah, absolutely.
Grable wanted him back. He was able to get him. He was a malcontent in Philly.
He'll be great this year. He'll be good next year, and then he'll be a malcontent year three.
Yep,
that's AJ Brown. That's his MO. So,
and for the Browns' perspective, you know they're not going anywhere the next couple of years. By the time they start to get good in 2 or 3 years, all of a sudden Myles Garrett's going to be 33.
Yep.
So you get Verse, who's a very good player. He's got to take that next step, but I think he fills in nicely on that defense. And like you said, the first, second, and third over the next couple of years, that if Stafford plays one more year only and they start Ty Simpson, you know, that second rounder, then that third rounder the next 2 years could be towards the top of those rounds a little bit more than you think right now. So the Browns might be okay there. From the Rams' perspective, they gave up the picks. They have their quarterback of the future, or who they think is their quarterback of the future because of the Simpson pick this year. So – and we know that they trade their first rounders anyway.
Yeah, the Rams don't care about the draft. It's fine. I mean, listen, the Rams are saying, hey, listen, we lost to Seattle. We got to find a way to beat Seattle. Here's the way. I'm going to take this. We didn't look like we did it in the first round draft pick when we took Simpson. And everyone was like, why are you doing that? Why? Because our plan is to trade for the best defensive player on the planet or one of the top three, whatever you want to call them. And let him line up and be a menace on an already very solid front seven of the defense. Really a whole solid defense all around. The Rams become the favorite in the NFC off this move pretty quickly.
Yep.
You agree.
Giants made a couple moves, too, for the wide receiver room.
Yeah, absolutely. They went a youth movement.
They brought back OBJ. they signed Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, and
And they bring in Brex and Berrios more for special teams because they lost how do you say his name? Olchewski?
Yeah.
The gunner.
That was Olchewski, I think, but yeah.
So, you know, Berrios fills in that way. You know, OBJ, Juju, boy, Jackson Dart's got to have his hands full.
You know what it is, though? They're trying to put some talent around him, and they're banking on the fact that Harbaugh can keep the team in line.
Yep. He'll be fine in the locker room as long as he doesn't hang out with Trump anymore.
Well, that's the funny thing. The Jets now are the quiet team.
Yeah, I know.
When was the last time that happened? We also had an NBA – someone passed away in the NBA, Kev. Rick Adelman passed.
Yeah.
You know, listen, all-time winningest coach for the Kings. Got them to the conference finals. Should have won. The refs didn't steal game six. The Kings were the Kings probably are an NBA champion. That was a great team with Mike Bibby and Christie and obviously Weber and Divac and Stojakovic. They were a great squad. They got hosed and Robert Horry buried them at a three in game six. And then a few more phantom foul calls in game seven. But Adelman did a great job. Hell of a coach, Kev.
10th all-time in wins. And when you look at those top players and top coaches, look at winning percentage. For coaches that with that many games, the only guys better than him, guys by the name of Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, Jerry Sloan, and George Karl.
Top five. I mean, that tells you all you need to know.
Like I said, terrific, terrific coach. Got screwed in that playoff game against the Lakers. Those Kings teams are fun to watch.
They were. They did a lot of fun things. They were a good squad.
Yep. But he passed away. Natural causes, 79.
Yep. Quick point on college baseball, if I might.
Absolutely.
Congratulations, St. John's making it to the Super Regionals. So they got through in the Seminole bracket, the Florida State bracket. Here's the thing: if you're not watching this, you're missing some exciting baseball. The college baseball has been unbelievable. Lots of dramatic home runs to end games. Lots of big strikeouts to end games. The crowds have been amazing. If you get a chance to tune into the Super Regionals this weekend, you really should. It's really been riveting stuff. And the same thing with the college softball, the women's side. I mean, it has been just incredible softball. This, you know, everybody talks about the NCAA tournament and everybody talks about the college football playoff and all that stuff. What baseball and softball are doing are really exciting right now. And, you know, the baseball is you know, it's a little bit of a round robin, you know, two losses and you're eliminated.
Yep.
But it's been riveting stuff. And, you know, we had West Virginia survive hitting a monster three-run homer with the last strike. You know, you had a bunch of different things happen going on here and good rivalries. You know, it's much more of Oregon playing Oregon State for the right to go. And, you know, a lot of good things were happening. So if you get a chance, it's really, especially this time of year, the baseball has been unbelievable. And the one and the two seed, UCLA and Georgia Tech, both knocked out. UCLA got knocked out by St. Mary's, who's the four seed, who eventually lost to Cal Poly, who gets into that to the Super Regionals as well.
Yep.
And that's all I had to say about that. Anybody else have anything else?
Yeah, French Open real quick.
Yes, absolutely.
So the men's side, we said it was wide open for the Americans this year, right? Well, guess what? No Americans left. Francis Tiafoe was the last one. But what's interesting, Sinner goes out second round. He was up two sets to none, one game away from winning. The heat got to him. He lost 18 of his last 20 games.
Wow.
Djokovic lost in the third round. Wawrinka and Cilic, who were both in it, lost. So you'll have a brand new men's champion for the French Open. Not an American, unfortunately. On the women's side, Coco Gauff was knocked out early. There's no Americans left there. Number one seed Sabalenka is still around. She's never won the French Open. And nobody else on the women's side also has won the French Open. So we'll have a brand new French Open, well, brand new Grand Slam champion in both, well, not French Open winner in both the men's and the women's.
No, it's cool. Tiafoe was like up two sets to one, up four games to one, 40-15, yep. And he fell apart, you know. Ended up losing the fourth set, then losing the fifth set 6-4, and that was that. I mean, you know, just one of those things. And the favorites have struggled at Roland Garros.
But, you know, tomorrow the Italians would be very happy. Three of the four playing in the two men's quarterfinals matchups are from Italy.
And there we are.
You guarantee at least one Italian. Maybe
they're going to be celebrating the French Open instead.
The Italian Open.
Cup. It's the Italian Open. Who needs the World Cup when we can win it at Roland Garros?
That's right.
Next week, by the way, we will be getting into it and touching on the World Cup. We're going to give you a little bit of a preview of the U.S. and a few of the other favorites that we think we have an eye on for you. Any other points before we wrap up, G?
Golden Knights hung on to take game one against Carolina. So Las Vegas is up game 1-0 in the Stanley Cup.
Carolina tied the 4-4, and the Vegas scored late to win the 5-4.
Yeah, yep. Again, Hurdle scored, and he's been the guy that was on Stone's line. That third line scoring has been the difference for Vegas in a lot of these situations. Let's see how Carolina responds in game two. They lost game one to Montreal, remember, as well. And then they won four straight. So we'll see what happens. Kevin might be right on this five. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren with Gino here with Kevin. Talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we're begging the Knicks to give us a great series and find a way to win a championship for the first time in New York since 2012. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Please follow us on social, like us, share our stuff. If you don't like it, pretend you like it, but follow us and, you know, just be part of the revolution. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.